Hello, everyone. My name is Victoria Walker, and I'm a graduate student at Iowa State University. I'm here today to present what we've done so far in investigating the impact of soil textural inputs on satellite-retrieved soil moisture. So I just want to start by bringing people's attention to the fact that while this session has been all about SMAP, the soil moisture that I'm using comes from the SMOS satellite. It was launched in 2009, and it works similar to the passive component of SMAP. So there's one big problem that we have, and that's that SMOS is too dry over the South Fork of the Iowa River watershed. Remember, this is one of those core validation sites for SMAP as well, and SMAP is also too dry over this watershed. The South Fork is in central Iowa, and it's about 60% corn and 40% soybean. There are three SMOS grid points, or DGGs, that represent this entire network. And then there are 20 USDA sites that are monitoring precipitation and soil moisture and temperature at four different depths in the soil. So I want to illustrate what we see for this dry bias. So what you have in front of you is the SMOS soil moisture on the y-axis versus the South Fork in-situ soil moisture, and that is the 5 centimeter soil moisture. And this is for the growing season, April through October, of the years that we have in-situ data available. So that's going to be 2013 through 2015. The first big point from this graph is that we can visually see just how strong this bias is. SMOS is retrieving a significantly lower soil moisture than what's measured in the network. What we can also see is if we look at these three different colors, so those are our three different grid points. This issue of the high bias isn't just isolated to one of the points. It's widespread over the whole network. So we do have a bias of about 0.07 meters cubed per meters cubed, which was consistent with SMAP's bias. And we also have an RMSE of 0.07, which is well outside the mission accuracy goals of 0.04. So what are things that could cause a dry bias? The first would be RFI contamination. If RFI was present, it would increase the brightness temperatures and lead us to retrieve a soil that is too dry. So what we did is we compared evening versus morning overpasses to see if there was a significant difference in the consecutive soil moistures, and what we did not find any RFI. The other thing that could cause our dry bias is if the surface temperature used in the retrieval is too low. So if the surface temperature in the retrieval is too low, then when the SMOS processor tries to model the brightness temperature that it measured, it has to increase the emissivity to compensate for that temperature, which would give us, again, a drier soil. So we investigated that, and we actually found that the ECMWF temperature input is too high, which would produce a wetting effect. But the magnitude of that error is really too small to significantly impact our retrieval. So now what we're looking at is the calculated emissivity. If it's too high, we will retrieve a too dry of a soil. And the two things we're going to focus on here are your dielectric model choices. What you're choosing is going to have a huge impact on the soil moisture that you retrieve. And we're also going to look at error in auxiliary data files, particularly the soil texture file. So there are three dielectric models that are in consideration for SMAP. These are the Dobson, Mironov, and Wang and Schmugge models. And two of them have been used by SMOS either currently or at some point in time. So the Dobson model, which is dependent on sand, clay, and bulk density, was used by SMOS up until data version 551, which was in April of 2012. And since that time, SMOS has used the Mironov model for soil moisture retrievals, and that model, its only textural input is the clay content. And the third one is the Wang and Schmugge, and that is dependent on sand, clay, and porosity. So we wanted to show how much your choice in dielectric model could affect your retrieved soil moisture. So on your x-axis, you have a Dobson retrieved soil moisture. And then on your Y, you have that. You have a retrieved soil moisture, either Mironov, which are your green lines, and then Wang and Schmuggy, which are your red. And it's that retrieved soil moisture minus what the Dobson would retrieve. And then the different line styles here are showing different polarizations and incidence angles. So what we see here is that both the Mironov and the Wang and Schmuggy will retrieve a wetter soil than the Dobson when given the same input parameters. And then the Wang and Schmuggy is also wetter than the Mironov. So the next thing we look at is how much sand and clay contents will influence the soil moisture retrieval. And it's important, it's going to be important to note here that the values I have, they're not just for the South Fork, but the entire working area. So what the processor has to consider, all the little grid cells it has to think of when trying to retrieve soil moisture. So SMOS and SMAP are currently using soil texture values taken from StatsGo. And for SMOS, those are gridded at a resolution of about 4 kilometers. So clay in the South Fork working area ranges from 0.15 to 0.35 and averages at 0.26. And then sand in the working area ranges from 0.1 to 0.4 and averages about 0.27. And then before data version 6.20, which was implemented in May of this year, SMOS was actually using a different textual database. It was using FAO data at a coarser resolution of about 10 kilometers. And one of the driving factors for the soil map change was to enhance intermission comparability between SMOS and SMAP. So I'm going to start by showing what the clay map used to look like compared to what it does now. So before May of this year, the SMOS clay map used the same clay value for this entire working area, and that was a value of 0.4, which is extremely high when we look at what is actually happening in this area. So on the right plot, you have what the current soils map is, and then it's gridded out to the resolution that SMOS is using. We see that we have a high clay feature in the western edge of the region, but the central area is pretty consistent in being around 0.25 or a little higher. So next we're going to move to sand. So before the new data version, SMOS also had a constant sand value over this entire region, and that was a value of 0.3. So it wasn't as drastically off as the clay was. The average sand value for this area is 0.27. But what we do have regions of very high sand and very low sand. There's much more variability in the sand content here than there was in the clay. So we wanted to look at how much does that air between the old and new map, how much does it affect retrieved soil moisture? So this is for our most extreme case. So this is a rough, bare soil. There's no vegetation influencing the retrieved soil moisture here. And what you have is theta V, or the volumetric soil moisture on the x-axis, is what would be retrieved using a given dielectric model with certain textural input, that's your plotted lines, for a measured brightness temperature, that's your y-axis. So if we look at the plot to the left, that is showing how much the Dobson in blue, Mironov in green, and Wang and Schmuggy in red, how much those three models change with varying clay impacts. So the stars are going to be your lowest clay content and the triangles your highest clay content. And what we see is that the Dobson does not have a very strong change with clay, but the Mironov and Wang and Schmuggy both get considerably wetter. They will retrieve a much wetter soil moisture at a higher clay content than they would at a lower clay content. So then if we go to look at sand, so the plot on your right, this is just the Dobson and the Wang and Schmuggy. Remember, the Mironov does not take in sand as an input. It's only dependent on clay. Well, the first thing we see here is that while the Wang and Schmuggy is dependent on sand, it really doesn't change that much with sand input. Well, as the Dobson will retrieve a drier soil the higher you go in sand content. So we want to kind of look at how much that affects our retrieved soil moisture, and we do that by looking at a year-to-year bias. So 2013 and 2014 had the old bias, had the old soils map, and then 2015 had the new soils map. And 2015 is drier than the previous 2 years. The soils map was not the only change in the data revisions that were made at this point in time. So what we do want to look at is how much air is in soil moisture using the Mironov model, because that's what SMOS is using right now. So on the x-axis, you have the soil moisture retrieved with a clay content of 0.4, so that's the old clay value. And then the y is that retrieved soil moisture minus what we could say the real is, with the blue being a real clay content of 0.2, ranging down to the red of 0.3. So what we see here, it confirms what we saw with the brightness temperatures, that as clay content increases, the Mironov is retrieving a wetter soil. And that makes sense with what we saw for 2015, because in 2015, when we decreased the clay content, we increased our dry bias. So in conclusion, airs and soil texture are not the cause of our dry bias. Extreme clay content air, when vegetation is not a factor, results in soil moisture errors of up to 0.03, and overestimation of clay content results in a too wet soil retrieval. Sand content results in minor errors in the Dobson and none in the Wang and Schmuggy. And then your choice of dielectric model impacts your soil moisture retrieval by up to 0.02 to 0.04 meters cubed per meters cubed, depending on which model you're looking at. The Dobson will retrieve the driest soil and the Wang and Schmuggy the wettest.
Okay. We have time for questions.
I noticed at the very beginning that your water shed is dominated by problem, and then the South Fork station is in something a bunch of grass. Is there any effect of the leftover in this dry bias?
So the question is about where the stations are located compared to the actual fields, and that would be a question for Mike Koch, since he is in charge of the South Fork area.
There's a very good question, and field experimentation can help correct for that. And in 2014,
yes,
there was an extensive, Victoria was quite involved in that, experimentation where in-field measurements were made to compare to the permanent stations. You can't have the permanent stations in the field because the farmers just hit them with tractors. So the accuracy is actually quite good. There's a strong correlation and low bias between the field measurements and the side of the field permanent stations. So it's something that is of concern, and it's been addressed in this watershed. Not everyone, but in this watershed, these numbers are fairly accurate. Are there any questions for Victoria, though? If no questions, we can move on. Thank you, Victoria.